Welcome to Fluid, a podcast on queerness in its entirety and the lost connections between all of us, queer or not. My name is Nick and welcome to this journey. So this series in general, but you know, starting off here in episode one, is really going to be exploring and tackling the narratives that have throughout history positioned the queer community as abnormal. I'll be speaking to Randolph Trumbach, who is an expert on homosexuality in Britain. I think he is 75, so he's been at this for a while. The conversation was just genuinely so enlightening, and I learned so much history that isn't very well documented, so I can't wait to share that with you. So, fluid is a substance that has no fixed shape, right? Yet, it can move and it can bend and it can fit whatever container it needs to be. But what I love is that no matter how much it moves, it doesn't get smaller, it doesn't diminish. You know, you put a glass of water in a cup, then put it in a box, it's still the same amount of water. To me, that's really similar to queerness. Historically, we've had to mould ourselves and find fruition in different forms, but we've always been here. How that relates to my kind of personal identity and my personal journey, you know, coming into my queerness has been stepping into my emotional maturity and confidence as a young adult to kind of be myself, but also inviting that inner child out too. You know, the one that felt scared and wrong for being a little queer baby. I guess when something so neutral and like free that exists within you or is you is wrong or different or abominable in the worst cases, it really begs a whole different set of questions. Like, the openness in myself is exactly where my open-mindedness comes from generally. The critical standpoint that I take externally now no doubt grew from a place of self-acceptance and letting go of fear of what other people thought of me, you know, still think of me. And I think that notion is really beautiful and important to stress, that queerness isn't something we should be scared of in society, you know, afraid for our children. It's actually something we should uplift. It's beautiful. So let me unpack this a bit more, okay? So for me, my sexuality continues to be a point of contention for myself. While in essence, I think it's extremely beautiful that my love and desire isn't bound by gender, I have a feeling of being not quite queer enough and not quite straight enough. You know, despite the beautiful relationships that I've been lucky to have, I've never felt truly understood in them. And there's always kind of been a feeling of being caught between the gaps of where I can lay my bed. But the thing is, I've come to realise that this journey is for me to work out. I can't wait for other people to understand or accept me before I can do it for myself. So, you know, this journey is going to probe questions that, what are the gaps between us? What are the things that separate us? The lines neatly drawn, are they porous or are they fixed? You know, I think, you know, these questions are things that many of us face, whether it be in terms of sexuality or gender or the other categories that fail to represent how complex we are as humans. And in the face of something we don't understand, we don't have to respond with fear. Now, in case you're wondering, we're not going to be explicitly talking about queer issues in this series, but part of fluid for me is trying to really dispel the myth that issues that queers face are only relevant to that community. I'm not alone, and I'm definitely not the first to be tired of the bullshit of this age. Technology, fake news, algorithms have created a complex world for us to live in. You know, we've been guinea pigs for technology. I had Bebo and MSN by the age of 10, and so, you know, from childhood, probably like many of you listening, whether I knew it or not at the time, I had this online version of me that I was always trying to keep up with. Now, while in some pockets of the internet I could explore anonymously, this feeling of being watched has been part of my life for the most part I can remember. Allowing fluidity into our development means allowing ourselves to change, to grow, to embody the most authentic version of ourselves each day. Naturally, this is going to take a bit of trial and error, and I think that pressure we face to be consistent online can inhibit this process. To be fluid is to move and change, but also to be messy. Water is messy. Nothing about humanity is clean, whatever that means. You know, look at an animal or human giving birth for reference. But the glossy buttons, the likes, the stats, they turn us into products to consume. But we're not perfect, are we? We're not cookie cutter, already formed beings. So inviting that fluidity in, queer or straight, is going to open us up to connections maybe we didn't think were possible. Anyway, I'm going to come back to technology later on in the series. So I've set the scene a bit. We're going to jump in with Randolph now because we're going to, like I said, go back in time, dig around and see what we can find in terms of social attitudes to queerness, homosexuality, anything that differs from a kind of heterosexual norm. And then we're going to come back round and see what we think. So the period in time that we're talking about is around 1700. So that is 321 years ago. This time was a period in time where a lot changed globally. We'd just basically had a civil war in England. There was the collapsing but also resurging of the British Empire around the world. A few decades later, we were set to have the French and American Revolution. And there was just a lot of bloodshed in this period of time. And due to the exploitation of the British Empire, really, you know, there was a lot going on. And that actually meant that internally, Britain had the resources to grow and, you know, create the Industrial Revolution, but also be politically quite stable. So, welcoming Randolph to the stage.
Yeah, fine, thank you.
All good. Well, thanks for joining me.
Okay. I was a little nervous that I won't do the clicking correctly, so...
So, let's get straight to the nitty-gritty.
What you have is a documented European society, statistically documented, where you can say all the males, and we keep talking about males because we just don't know about the women, all the males are bisexual.
So there's not much recording of women's queer history, but it essentially mirrored this dynamic. And, you know, to summarise why there's this disparity, Randolph says something pretty fitting, to be honest.
The change is not so severe in the 18th century. And I think the reason that it's not so severe is that for most 18th century women, it is more important that they're having sex with men than that they are not having sex with women.
That's a whole other kind of topic of convo, but for now, to illustrate my point, I'm just going to stick to the data of what we know and what we can kind of prove, essentially. But later on in the story, we're going to delve into these very stories that have been tried to be squished, especially of queers that are not cisgendered men. What stood out to me about this point in time was that sexuality altogether had a different meaning. Now, Randolph uses bisexual and homosexual, but in fact, none of these words were even used at the time. In fact, the terms heterosexual and homosexual only came into existence in the 19th century, some 100 plus years later. Now, queerness, however you want to refer to it in this time, is not socially accepted, but nonetheless very prevalent.
To come up with a modern analogy, it's like smoking grass. Extremely widespread, illegal and immoral, but extremely widespread, okay?
So sexuality is heavily related to age, or not necessarily sexuality, but sexual practices. There was a widespread cultural norm of older men sleeping with younger men, but then going on to marry women. Oof. I mean, at this point on the Zoom call, I had to gather myself. All the questions were falling apart and I had to truly just listen. I think it's because all the markers and understandings I've been taught to associate with sexuality weren't relevant in this context. People weren't classified as such, there was just different practices that people did and then didn't do.
But they just don't use a term. It's so for granted that you don't have to have a word to describe it, okay?
Interestingly, it made me reflect in the moment on language and how we use it to signpost, but when you're using different language, it's really distorting and disorientating. I was viewing all these norms from my fresh 2020 eyes, which took some time to acclimatize. At this point, I'm ready to blame Christianity for the spread of homophobia, and I'm raring for Randolph to consolidate my opinion.
Christianity is there, but Christianity is not the only force in people's lives. And a lot of gay activists who also happen to be anti-religious want to make Christianity responsible for the change after 1700.
A lot of queer people have been punished, have been, you know, had violence committed against them because of religion, which to me is the most horrible irony.
The problem is that after 1700, Christianity, in fact, is declining in importance in Western European society.
You know, around this time period that we're talking about, Christianity is spreading rapidly throughout the world, being used by the British Empire as a form of colonizing people. And so when we compare that to what Randolph is talking about within a British context, it's really different.
I think it's not Christianity that's responsible for the change. It's the modern sex gender system. And if you want to find out an explanation for the change, you have to put it at the feet, not of the church, but at the feet of modern Western culture.
I thought this was really interesting, and with time, to be honest, I've been able to reflect on it more. And I think it's so relevant still. You know, the whole men are from Mars and women are from Venus thing.
That attitude is still widespread, you know. That men and women are equals, and yet completely different from each other.
What history shows us is how enmeshed sexuality and gender are.
Modern society is only willing to accept equality between males and females as if the equality does not involve the ability of one side or the other to become like the other.
Any ability to move or transgress these lines of gender would disrupt and threaten a system. Sexuality, in a way, upholds gender. I think this is really relevant for today's situation in terms of people's views on gender and sexuality. You know, I think both things are a spectrum, and that you shouldn't have to be male or female, and you shouldn't have to be gay or straight, if that doesn't work for you, and that you should be able to find somewhere that's a bit more fluid and fits in between. And what we can see here, what Randolph is illuminating, is that there was a period in time where, at least in terms of sexuality, there was a way more relaxed way of seeing things. And to put it kind of frankly, it wasn't that deep in terms of who you were sleeping with. He compared it to smoking weed. It was like everybody kind of just did their thing. And then it became a lot more stringent.
Now, if you're going to prove that you are exclusively heterosexual, to use the modern term, how are you going to prove it? Well, you're going to prove it by showing that you have sex with women and that you have a lot of sex with women.
There was a lot more pressure on the gender binary to exist, to basically uphold patriarchy. You know, our expressions of love, desire, whatever, it's hugely affected by what we think at that time. And, you know, what we think isn't necessarily driven solely by morals or what is moral. It's about power. You know, if anything, this shows us that a shift towards homophobia was really about preserving a societal structure where men were at the top. There is a huge trans history here in the UK and gender non-conforming history, and we're going to touch on some of those legends throughout time who have kind of subverted this cisgendered norm that we like to harp on about. But I don't want to tokenize it and just chuck those stories in here, so that's why I've kind of lent more towards the sexuality things in this episode. But saying that, it's, you know, it's clear that we can't really talk about these two things separately. They are totally related, and that's why, you know, queer issues, if you want to call them that, are relevant to everyone. So look, there's no simple answer, which obviously would have made things easier, but I think that's kind of the point, isn't it? That's my point, is that we have to rest in the unknown. It's okay to not really have a concrete answer. And it's more realistic to kind of look at the situation from a bird's eye view and see different influences and factors in the situation. So to come full circle, I want to invite some friends to explain to you what queerness means to them. And before I do so, I just want to pull up, you know, Randolph's words again, where he spoke about not needing, or there historically not always being terms or words defining sexual identities and practices. A sense of fluidity in your own relationship with defining it is great and is not a problem.
Queerness to me means searching for a genuine expression of my own identity without fear and without the pressures of what society and the binaries have tried to enforce on me. But living honestly, with love for myself and others.
To me, queerness is a state of authenticity which grants infinite possibility. It is a pair of open arms. It is a collective identity, and it is above all a community of love and freedom.
To me, queerness means the freedom to morph into whatever shape you are, even if it's a bit odd, and to also be with and love other people, other shapes, unconditionally.
I think some straight people are a bit intimidated or unsure of what queer means, but I hope, you know, hearing Pierre and Kira and Margot, you can kind of hear that's the whole point. It is a fluid thing, it isn't one thing, and it is very personal. So what we can take away from this whole thing is definitely the concrete relationship between gender and sexuality. To contextualise this now, a 2020 UK report, and this is from a Guardian article which you can definitely find on Google, found gender stereotyping is affecting our kids' mental health, adding that it is at the root of problems with body image and eating disorders, and record male suicide rates as well as violence against women and girls. So here what we're seeing is this kind of rigid gender binary and the expectations of kids to fit and comply with these ideas of what we should be and to perform is directly relating to our mental health, our kids' mental health, and our children's experiences of the world. So this is where my bid comes in, you know, for the queer future. Not just for little gabies running around, which is my absolute dream, shame-free queer kids, but just to live in a society where those kids exploring their gender identity, you know, expressed in toys or colours or whatever arbitrary thing you want to put on it, you know, they're not pressured, they're not soaking up from their environment that, you know, if they go down the queer route or if they express that part of themselves, that they need to hide it. Now, like I said earlier, we are going to continue with this series by bringing some of these stories to life, but I wanted to lay the kind of groundwork of why I call this thing fluid, what fluidity means to me, and what queerness means in general. So I hope, you know, that I've succeeded with that. I will meet you back here for episode 2 of Fluid. In the interim, you can find me on Instagram at fluidpodcast if you so wish. But until then, my angels, take care.